Metallica, here they come, the kings of metal.
So fucking what?
This is Ray Burton, and you're listening to Metal Up Your Podcast.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
This is episode 135, and we're going to get into the top 10, in our opinions, Metallica riffs. We've never done this before.
And this is the episode that we were going to do last week, but we started talking about James's So What interview about Injustice for All, and it got away from us. But I've been hearing on the socials and a few emails that was one of the best episodes we've ever done.
Yeah, people seem to be very excited about it, which is very cool to read. I mean, sometimes I think we get excited about episodes and maybe they don't do as well as we thought, and vice versa. And like in this case, I thought it was a ton of good sauce in there. I had a great time recording it with you. But it was very interesting to see, like, wow, this is your best episode yet. I was like, wow, really? Okay.
So we're going to spend all of 2020 just talking about various interviews, because the boys have done a few over the years.
They've done a couple, yeah.
We do need to do an entire episode on that Playboy interview right before Jason left.
Can we get a copy of the magazine, too? Just
for the articles.
Listen, it's just for the article.
Just for the articles.
And it's just to be thorough.
Just for the articles and the naked ladies.
That's it.
Other than that, no problem.
No big deal.
And for the ads in the back.
That's right.
For a Sabian.
I love the ads. That's my favorite part.
When my cousin and I were kids, this is before we knew that we liked girls and all that, you know, before sex was just gooey and icky to us.
Ew.
But we used to go to my great-grandfather's house and, like, stay with him for the weekend. Really cool old dude, and, you know, he was really good to us and a lot of fun, but kind of hands off. We would just go to, like, out to his house in Alabama and just, you know, shoot each other with BB guns, which is something we did do.
Yeah.
There was just nothing to do.
Sure.
This is like way before computers, and we had like a Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we thought was just super funny is we would call sex hotlines at night just to, and we weren't trying to do anything sexy. We didn't know anything about it. We would call sex hotlines and just, like, prank call them.
Sure.
Not knowing that he's getting the phone bill.
He's getting charged every time you do it.
And we did it like, you know, for 30 minutes or an hour both nights of the weekend.
Oh my gosh.
So then we had a big sit down when that all came to...
And how are you explaining it to him to convince him that you actually weren't trying to talk to like a live girl?
Yeah, because we were like 11.
Right, but that's kind of an age where boys start figuring it out, you know, like, oh, I think I like girls.
No, it was definitely, we weren't young enough to where they were like, oh, they're just being kids. It was like the birds and the bees talk.
Yeah, it was that time.
And it was like, you're going to be mowing lawns all summer to pay for the $100 whatever.
Yeah, hey,
toll-free.
1-900 numbers were not cheap.
1-800-SEXY-CHICK.
That or call Miss Cleo. Call me now. Remember those commercials?
Yeah. What would she do? Tell your fortune or something?
Yeah, something like that. She was like a fortune, a TV fortune teller.
We ought to have a 1-800-SEXY Metal Up Your Podcast phone line.
Hi, you've called Metal Up Your Podcast.
So what are you
hot
wearing?
Line.
What are you wearing right now?
This is Ethan, aka the mailman.
You're wearing a battle vest? What kind of patches you got on
more.
That thing?
What do you sleeveless or sleeve?
What's your favorite Metallica record?
Oh, really? Blackened. Too bad it's not the name of a record, just a song. But go on.
Well, somehow, if you're joining us for the first time, we are an All Metallica podcast. If you haven't gleaned that by now, we're glad you're here. If it's your first time listening, we're going to have a fun, in-depth, nerdy conversation about our favorite riffs. And that's what we do over here. We're not experts. We used to say we know more than you, we know less than you. And it's just a conversation between two good buddies about our favorite band.
That's right.
So that's going to be fun. Let's knock out some housekeeping. We don't really have any notes because I'm going to Japan tomorrow. You've got a thing to do this afternoon, and life's crazy as usual for us.
I leave for shows with Brandon Carlisle on Sunday, and I won't be back to the day before I leave for Europe, so it's going to be hectic. And by the way, to those listening that live in London, one of the two nights I'm going to be there, the 20th or 29th, we are going to go out to some pub and hang. I'll maybe throw it up on the socials or something so people can come hang out with me and my wife and some friends.
A Metal Up Your Podcast London meetup.
We're going international, Clint. You should do a Tokyo meetup. Would you think your wife would be into it?
No, I'm not doing anything Metal Up Your Podcast.
This was my
related.
Wife's idea. I was like, we're only there for two nights. Like, let's hang with our friends. And she's like, you should invite a bunch of your metal friends out.
Wow.
I was like, you asked for it.
If I told my wife, hey, we're going to turn one of our precious nights in Tokyo, one of the coolest cities in the world, into a Metal Up Your Podcast thing, she would.
I mean, it's not really a Metal Up Your Podcast thing. Like, it's literally just, hey, we're going to be at this bar. Come down and say hi. Come hang. That's it.
Right, but they're going to want to come talk about the podcast in Metallica.
Well, listen, that's off limits. Let's just talk about life. Let's talk about your new prime minister.
Dude, anytime people come up on the bus and come visit me on the road, they're always surprised at how little we talk about Metallica.
Right.
I'm always like, yeah. What about you? What's your deal?
Right.
What do you do? What's totally. Going on? What about movies? What other music do you like? You know?
For sure.
That's what's fun about it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what I think we've done with this podcast, too, is even expose people to different music, and that's what we like to talk about, Metallica included.
Speaking of that, my radio episode that's dropping next week is all Japan-themed songs.
I saw that. That's pretty awesome.
Super fun.
Very cool.
Surprised I knew that many songs based around Japan.
So songs that either are by a Japan-based artist or about Japan?
There are zero Japan-based artists.
Okay.
I don't listen to any Japanese artists.
Riddle me this. We don't have to name the song title, but is there a certain Weezer song on there?
No.
Oh, okay. I was thinking that one. Goddamn, you have Japanese girls. Do it to me every time. Off Pinkerton.
No, I didn't put any racist songs on there.
That's not racist. He's talking about how much he's in love with Japanese girls.
Well, didn't you just sing, Goddamn, you have Japanese girls?
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, man, you do it to me every time. You know, he can't resist them. That's why he's saying that.
Right, right.
I don't know. I don't know Rivers.
Well, I left off creepy pervert songs, too.
Okay, good. That's why I was asking. I'm just making sure. I was holding you accountable, Clint.
If you like the show, go leave us a review on iTunes. Goes a long way. Really easy to do. You can tell your buddies about it. You can tweet or Facebook about it. You can send a link saying, hey, this is one of my favorite podcasts. If you really like the show, you can get on the Patreon train. You're going to hear a commercial about that later. At the very least, we'd like to give a shout-out to our patrons. And we did get a new patron this week.
Although
the name is not right in front of me, but I'm pulling it up now. Well, just cool out, my babies.
Everyone cool out. Cool out, my babies. Be cool.
David Bryant. Awesome. Thank you, David Bryant.
Whether it's 1 or 10, you deserve a clap.
The Patreon is cool over there. We do a bunch of cool stuff. We give away a bunch of box sets. We gave away SNM2 tickets. We gave away Slane Castle tickets. We're going to be giving away a bunch of prizes. I have hundreds of stuff. What is that?
I think this might be yours. There's two copies.
I have hundreds of Metallica accoutrements in my garage that we're going to be giving away when things slow down a little bit.
Yeah, I think this fall, Clint and I will have a little powwow in Clint's garage / Metallica merch storage unit.
Yeah.
And we'll box some things up, send it out to the good people.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And you can get Cover Over Black in Volume 3, which is only available to patrons. And then also, if you become a patron, you get the first two volumes for free. You get Lunar Satan Demos for free.
And you started on Volume 4 already.
I already started Volume 4.
You did.
Very, very cool, weird version of a Reload song.
I have... Clint sent me a clip of it. Mm-hmm. I will give you no details other than it's real bitchin'.
What else should we say? We're on the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We
YouTube.
Do Instagram Lives all the time. We're on YouTube, Stitcher. We're even on Spotify somehow.
We just appeared there. It's fine.
And if you don't want to become a patron, but you are interested in our cover EPs, you can get those wherever you get music.
You can get the first two.
iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music. You can buy them directly from our website, which is kind of where we prefer.
Yeah, metalupyourpodcast.com.
And we've got t-shirts for sale over there. The whole rigmarole.
Right. And Volume 3 of Cover World Black will be available once we finish and release Volume 4.
Which will probably be in 6 days.
We're going to finish recording while we're on vacation. Sorry, honeys, but we are bringing recording gear.
Me and Rivers Coma are going to go to Tokyo together and creep out on the girls at karaoke
half
night.
Japanese
and,
girls?
Yeah. I did play the Vapors Turning Japanese.
Okay.
Which I did think, is this song racist?
I think I'm turning Japanese. I really think so.
Exactly. It's like, well.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm curious to hear your selections.
Yeah, it's fun. All right. And the best way to get a hold of us, of course, is metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. We like to take the pulse of the Metal Up Your Podcast community and see what's going on with everyone. We read 5 emails per show. We're going to do that right now in what we like to call the email corner.
Let's go. All right, our first email is from Stan Pearl. He says, hey guys, hope you're having a great week. Guess what we are. Have you ever done an episode or planned an episode where you dive into the best Metallica songs covered by other bands? In all my Metalli years, I've never really dug into it until now. And I'm really surprised by bands like Sum 41 doing a great job with Master of Puppets, and equally surprised with Dream Theater doing such a cringy version of the same song. Grant, these are the top results of basic YouTube search, but it would be interesting to know what your favorite ones are. And no, Apocalyptica and Cover All Black and Don't Count. Well, so then we're not doing it then. No one can reach those standards. Okay, I retract that. You're correct. It's the Maddie Stanzig. He signs his email. That could be a cool episode. I haven't really dove into a lot of bands covering it. I know the obvious, Sum 41 from the Icon performance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are probably the most high profile ones, all the bands that played there, and we covered Icon. So I don't know, maybe, I don't know, could be.
Yeah, I'm not all that interested.
I don't know. I think like the Icon performance stuff, I think was really fun to watch in that moment. It was fun to revisit it for an episode, but I don't often seek out that kind of stuff. I mean, I think he's right. I think Cover All Black and might just destroy all those anyway. So
Yeah, it's hard for me to tell. Like I don't really like cover songs that much, despite the fact that we do them, unless it's an artist that I love their voice and their sauce and the way their band sounds, and if they do something unique and creative.
The Ghost one was great. The singer from Ghost at that awards show that Robin Lars were at.
Yeah, the Polar Prize.
Yeah,
that's fine.
That was cool.
It's fine.
But again, I mean, you mentioned Apocalyptica. I mean, those are some of my favorite versions, just strings only. I think it's so beautiful, and I'll listen to that any day.
I think the way we would have to do it is because I'm not going to go seek all this out. Because it's like we have to pick our favorites. So that means finding a bunch
right. And
then picking our favorites of the bunch. We're going to have our fans send us links.
Yeah. Don't do it now. Just one of these days we'll make the announcement and you can send it over.
But thanks, Stan. Appreciate that. Alex Van Dyck, which we decided it's Dick, right?
I think we did.
Okay.
If not, we just did.
He says, I'm enjoying the Explore the Big Four episodes. I'm so deep into Metallica that I just never listened to any of the other three. If I had to rank them, it'd be Anthrax, Megadeth, Slayer. Not to say Slayer's bad, I like all of them. Anthrax to me is the best overall package for my musical taste, but Megadeth has a ton of sweet riffs and melodies. One thing that hasn't been mentioned in any of the Explore the Big Four episodes is album art. Just as a whole, all of these bands have some really fun album covers, certainly better than most pop rock country acts of the 80s and 90s. He says, okay, I'll stop rambling. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Alex, P.S., about the Super Bowl halftime discussion you had, there's another reason that Metallica can't play the Super Bowl. They insist on performing live, and the NFL forces its halftime performers to lip sync, and so there was an impasse in the early negotiations, which eventually led to the Too Heavy for Halftime show at the 49ers stadium. All right, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know that a lot of it is lip synced, at least with like the band or whatever. Even when the Chili Peppers made an appearance with somebody else who was performing, like they weren't even plugged in. Flea even went online and talked about it. Like, look, this is a TV thing. Like, you know, the logistics to actually play live for the 30 seconds we're on TV is annoying. So whatever, you know. But back in the day, like you had like guys like Prince and Bruce Springsteen, Tom Petty, like they're playing live.
When Paul McCartney did it, that was just like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think in recent years they're more encouraging of playing to tracks and stuff like that.
Well, that's because now it's a bunch of pop artists who can't play instruments.
Well, even when like who did it last? Like not Coldplay.
No clue.
I don't know. I don't watch football.
Oh, it was Maroon 5, right?
Maroon 5. That's right.
I'm sure they use tracks
for sure.
They're like they've definitely crossed over into just a straight pop band.
Yeah. And that's great. Whatever. Have fun playing with your tracks and stuff. But yeah, you're right. Metallica's a live band. So in that regard, yeah, I can't see them ever doing it. I don't want them to do it. I don't want them to get up there and play for 15 minutes of cut down versions of their songs, you know, for an audience that probably mostly doesn't care.
Oh, dude.
Which is why they did the Too Heavy for Halftime show. It was fucking awesome.
NFL fans for sure care about Metallica.
I mean, they do. But like, the Super Bowl, I imagine, is a lot of maybe more mixture and a lot of celebrities there and crap like that.
I mean,
that,
it's just, it's one of the biggest gigs in the world.
It is, yeah.
I would like to see them do it, but I'd like to see them do it on their own terms.
Yeah, on their own terms. I could agree with that.
But me and my daughter were listening in the car the other day, and the Blues Traveler came on, Runaround.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I had a couple of Blues Traveler records. I went to the Horde Festival. I like Blues Traveler. I've done a few shows with them. They surprisingly opened for some Bob shows.
Yeah.
And hung out with John Popper, cool guy, cool band, blah, 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 et cetera. Yeah. But they're not like the Beatles to me.
Sure.
But we were listening to Runaround, which was made in like 94, 95.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so good. The playing's good. Obviously, John Popper's vocal is just unbelievable.
Insanely good harmonica.
And the harmonica playing is just otherworldly. And I was thinking, you know what? This is so cool. It's like all real. There's no auto-tune.
Right.
There are no tracks. Like what you hear coming out of the speakers that sound to me as good as it did in 1994 is just four or five dudes in a room.
Just playing, yeah.
And that's kind of just over.
Yeah, I mean, for I'd say for like mainstream music, that's definitely over. I mean, there's still bands that obviously do it. You know, Paul Mook is a big, you know, advocate of doing that in the studio and just having like, you know, just a rock band come in and just he wants to capture what they do live.
Well, I was thinking about what Lizzie and Joe said in our Hailstorm interview where like they're going, you know, they're obviously a modern hard rock metal band.
Yeah.
And they're obviously perfect for, they can do their own big shows, but they're great for festivals, mm-hmm. you know, maybe not headlining yet, but they can go kill an afternoon or a late evening slot.
Right. Yeah.
At a festival, but they were saying they're one of the only bands now that doesn't have tracks, and
yeah.
how difficult it is to compete when the band before you and the band after you, not only are they all playing loud guitars and drums, but they've got backing vocals and they've got keyboards and extra yeah. loops and synthesizers and
right.
all this stuff pumping through the track, so their live show sounds like a fucking multi-tracked 67-track record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
it's a lot of bands don't want any detail the record to be missed live, so they rely on tracks, you know, a lot of mm-hmm. times, you know. I think in certain settings it's appropriate and it's fine. I mean,
sure,
I would do it if, like, you know, I made, or even God, even with my record, if I was had the opportunity to go on tour and I could bring a band, but I couldn't afford to bring my full band of 7 or 8 people,
mm-hmm.
you know, I might consider putting some stuff on tracks just so I could get a couple more things from the record out there. But I wouldn't do it unless it was out of necessity.
You know what John Davis of Supertrack used to do is he would re-record his record himself on a 4-track, yeah. and those would be his backing tracks.
I was on a tour where he did that, where he unfortunately the tour was not doing well. He was opening for somebody.
Was it Derek?
Ooh, he was opening for?
Yeah.
No, it was this band called The Violent Burning, this old kind of like rock band.
Yeah.
They thought they were, I think, a little bigger than they were at the time. I don't mm-hmm. know how, whatever, but the shows weren't great. And he got to the point where he had to tell me and the drummer, we were just doing a 3-piece thing, I was playing bass. Basically, like, he's like, hey, I can't afford to do this with you guys for the rest of the tour. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. I got to take you home kind of thing. So in between 2 shows, we got dropped off in Nashville, which was fine. It was no hard feelings at all. I mean, I love John to death.
That's just the economics just of it.
Exactly. I don't want him to suffer financially because of it. So he had two days off at home when he dropped us off, and he went into his little music room at his house and recorded the set list he was playing on his 4-track and mm-hmm. finished the tour with the 4-track, and he'd play, I mean, full electric to it. It wasn't like he was just playing acoustic.
No, I saw, it wasn't that tour. I saw him on tour with Derek Webb, mm-hmm. and he was opening, and it was funny because it wasn't like a singer-songwriter stripped down first of three right. thing. It was, he would hit play on like a Tascam or something.
This is a Yamaha MTX2, I think it's called.
And then he was playing like an SG with like 6 distortion pedals.
Yeah.
And it sounded like, you know, a metal record.
It's awesome.
And he was jumping around on stage like he was at Madison Square Garden.
It's kind of rad.
It was awesome.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I thought about doing that when I went out and did solo shows. Me and Jack O'Shea did a run of shows together last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about, I did make tracks, but I just did it from like my iPad or whatever, where I re-recorded my set list on just drums and bass, and that was it. But I thought about doing that because I had a 4-track at the time. I was like, that could use that John Davis idea. Be kind of fun, you know.
Well, speaking of rock bands like being relevant, so I was having coffee with my friend Rachel Lloyd this morning, and then Jerry Rowe came in. Do you know Jerry Rowe, big session drummer
yep.
in town?
Yeah,
he's in a really cool metal band with his wife called Friendship Commanders.
Oh, really? Okay.
Didn't he's like that. He's one of the busiest A-list drummers here in town. Does a lot of country records,
right?
But he's a huge metalhead.
Yeah,
like way into metal and horror films. He's a pretty cool cat.
That's cool.
We were talking this morning, and he said that demographically, he said that hard music's coming back, and that people, guitars are selling again. And he said that the highest demographic of people getting into rock music are high school and college age women.
Awesome!
How fucking cool is
I
that?
I love that.
And that led us on to a conversation about Greta Van Fleet. So right now, one of the biggest bands in the world is Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah.
And we'll get into their relevance with Metallica in a second, but they don't play the tracks. They are criticized for being derivative 70s rock, mostly Led Zeppelin.
Heavily criticized, yeah.
And my takeaway of that is, like, at least people are interested in guitar-oriented rock music again.
Right, yeah. I mean, I've listened to a couple of their tunes. I don't particularly care for it. Because, I mean, just to be honest, it is a very, very direct kind of rip-off of Led Zeppelin when I listen
sure.
to it. And it's not my topping I'm going to put on my pizza right now.
Well, for my money, if it's that if it sounds that much like Zeppelin, I'll just listen to Zeppelin.
Right.
But there's a whole generation of kids out there that don't listen to Led Zeppelin.
Exactly. That's what I was going to get to, was I think it's pretty cool that, you know, they have gained notoriety and they are getting very popular and are a reason that, you know, guitar sales are up. There was another article not too long ago, I think it was after Glastonbury or one of those big festivals over in Europe, that The Cure headlined, and then and literally the next week, guitar sales in England or wherever that was went up like crazy.
Awesome.
And people were kind of citing like, well, The Cure just headlined this festival and people were just stoked and went out and bought guitars or whatever.
I think we've had like a 20-year dip in interest in like guitar-centered real music that's not just Ear Fatigue, Katy Perry, Justin Timberlake. And these are all records I like. I'm not knocking them. And you know, you heard a song I wrote yesterday before we started this that's just definitely a Halsey ripoff.
But, well, I mean, pop's just, I mean, taken over, you know, more so than ever in the last 15 to 20 years.
But I think people, when they hear just the four dudes on a stage playing rock music, I think it's like, it's come around to where it's like refreshing again and inspiring. Mm-hmm. And there's power there that I think you miss. Like, I'll listen to a Katy Perry record and I'm just so tired by like the seventh song.
Yeah.
Because every bar, every two bars, there's new sonic information and a lot of like crazy sounds and beeps and blips. And I do think part of what is making people interested in that kind of bare bones output again are pop people like Lorde and Billie Eilish, Lana Del Rey, who are bringing guitars back into it, but also like bringing a lot of minimalism back to pop music.
Right, yeah.
And of course, rock music was always minimal, unless we're talking about ELO or Zappa or something.
Right, sure,
you know, your Fleetwood Macs and your Eagles and your Kisses.
And Bruce Springsteen.
It's all just straight up rock and roll.
Dream Theater.
Exactly. Now, the we have some news. The boys have announced that they're going to be touring into 2020.
Hey, we thought it was going to be done in October.
They are going to South America. They're doing 6 dates, and Greta Van Fleet is direct support.
Direct support, yeah. I mean, I think on the business side of things, I mean, it's probably a smart decision for them to bring that band because they're a big band right now.
They're selling tickets, yeah.
I am curious with how much criticism they've gotten, how they'll do like on their next album. You know, will they maintain the same sound? Will they take that criticism to heart and try to change who they are? I'm curious to see how this band's career goes.
Yeah, I can't say I care how their career goes.
I didn't say I care. I said I'm just curious.
You'll have to just tell me when
I'll let you know
when you find out. But I think it's smart because first of all, I think they're worth hard tickets. First of all, number two, they have a young audience, so it's smart for Metallica to bring in younger people. I think that's also part of why they're making that kids book.
Mm-hmm.
The ABCs of Metallica for Kids Illustrated, and it's fun and cartoonish. Right. What's that going to do? All of us Metallica fans with kids and grandkids are going to be getting it for our kids and grandkids.
Absolutely.
And that's going to just start a whole new generation to at least talking about Metallica. So the dates are I'm just going to read their press release.
Okay, cool.
Because for some Metallica fans, we've been told we are the source of news for the band.
If that's the case, then here you go.
You may be hearing it for the first time. So it says, as the Worldwide Tour hits the last leg in Europe, there's still so many places left to visit. South America, Europe first in 2020. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean they're going to go
Europe first in 2020?
Meaning they're going to go to more places, probably Asia.
Well, it just said the last leg, too.
As the Worldwide Tour hits the last leg in Europe.
Oh, right now. Okay.
There's still so many places left to visit. South America, Europe first. So I think that means there's more touring after South America.
Or does Europe first mean right now, since they're on they're currently on the last leg in Europe? Does that mean that, or they mean they're going to go back? Because why would you?
I'm going to read it a third time.
Europe first.
Put your thinking cap on.
Dude, my thinking cap is on tight.
There are still so many places left to visit. South America, Europe first. That means that they're going more places after South America. South America's first. Right?
I guess, sure.
Why would they say that? If you're saying it's possible that all they're going to do is South America, then be done.
I think it's possible.
No.
Read it fourth.
As the Worldwide Tour hits the last leg in Europe, there are still so many places left to visit. South America, Europe first.
So my takeaway was Europe before this. Europe first. Right? South America, Europe first.
Okay, no.
I don't understand.
It's not Europe first, it's you're up next. Jesus. And we've reached the limitations of the English language.
Oh my goodness, the whole time you're saying...
I thought you were reading it with me on the
Europe
screen.
Europe first. Okay, you are up first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There we go.
That's funny.
Yay, okay.
What a funny miscommunication, because I couldn't understand why you couldn't understand it, and you couldn't understand why I couldn't understand
But now we understand that we understand each other.
Wow, okay, Jesus. Okay, should we read it a fifth time?
Fifth time's a charm.
All right, so now that you know, it's saying that you're next, yeah. You're going to be the next in 2020, I think it definitely means they're going to go to Japan or China, or, I mean, where else do they have to go? The Middle East?
Africa?
Yeah.
South Africa?
Wow. Johannesburg, 2020. All right, well, back to South America. It says, the last time we had the pleasure was in 2017. As part, they did Lollapalooza in Brazil, right? Lollapalooza Festival, now it's time to come back with full... Wait, Brazil... Brazil is in South America?
Yeah,
it okay, is. I'm getting this right. I don't want to make it sound like a dummy. Full-on stadium experience as seen in North America and Europe for 6 headlining shows, including 2 Brazilian cities we've never played in, Belo Horizonte and Curitiba.
Okay.
Curitiba. Sorry, I'm butchering this. Opening the shows will be recent Grammy winners Greta Van Fleet. The perks of the current worldwide tour will be in place starting with the Wherever I May Roam black ticket we introduced over a year ago in North America. Just 1 ticket will allow floor access to any Metallica show on the South American tour. Black ticket holders need only choose the shows they would like to attend and make an online reservation no less than 48 hours before the gig. A limited number of these black tickets will be available, $600 through CID Entertainment. Once again, all tickets will include a free MP3 download of the shows attended, mixed by the team behind Hardwired to Self-Destruct. The free full show downloads can be obtained by scanning or entering the barcode from the show's ticket stub at livemetallica.com/scan. Last but not least, the enhanced experience options will be available with the 3 choices of special packages, including premium tickets and amenities ranging from early access to the venue and the Memory Remains Traveling Museum to meeting members of the band. I wonder if any of that memorabilia stuff's been damaged in all the travel.
Maybe. I mean,
the guitars, the drums, the lyrics, the costumes.
I mean, it's obviously always possible, but I mean, I've seen that museum kind of stuff on other tours I've been on that travels a lot, and it's very well put together. I mean, obviously things can still go wrong, but I mean, that's getting just as much wear and tear as their actual gear these on stage.
Right.
But I mean, they got someone in charge of all that experience stuff and all the museum stuff to make sure that, you know, when that comes out, they check it, make sure everything's still good.
And they're probably, I mean, they're in some nice cases. They probably get boxed up right when the gig starts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got a crew taking good care of it, it will last a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Especially if they're having to take care of some of those guitars.
Yeah, for sure.
Although I could also see the band being like, what, the Orange Thomas from Death Magnetic? We don't really give a shit. Let people right. see him. That's fine.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, that ends that email from Alex. Thanks, Alex.
Tim Rasmussen writes and says, hey, Clint and Ethan. Clint, I forgot to mention how great the last song you played on the radio episode was. Do you remember what that was?
I believe he's talking about an original I played called Bad Dreams.
Okay. He says, really cool sounds and work. Do you use Kontakt for some of your sound libraries? Just wondering what platforms you're using. Anyways, great work and great inspiration as always. Been back on your SoundCloud today and catching up on your latest work since this time last year.
Let me answer that real quick. So yeah, I do use Kontakt. For those of you who don't know what that is, Kontakt is like a software platform where you can load up a bunch of instruments in it, virtual instruments. So you get Kontakt, and then through Kontakt, you can get like organs and electric pianos, basses, synthesizers, and you play them through Kontakt.
Okay.
So it's this sort of universal template where it's all MIDI. So I have this keyboard in my studio. I set it to whatever the Kontakt instrument is.
Okay,
it's a lot of drums too.
Right, yeah.
A shitload of different kinds of electronic drums and acoustic drums, and then you play it on your MIDI controller.
Okay.
So I use that a lot. I also use a thing called Splice a lot, which is a subscription-based sample library. So anyway, and I use a drum sampling software called Battery.
I use Battery, okay.
So anyway, to answer that, I think he's going to pivot to you right here.
He is. Hey, Ethan, I'm checking out your new album today as well. Thank you very much. So I'm looking forward to hearing that. Can I request you play some more tracks from the band you did some Metallica covers in years ago when you were doing the radio episode? The band that you did the Unusual But Amazing version of Sanitarium with, that would be the Motorhome.
With Jeff?
With Jeff Fireball, yeah. Well, my version of Sanitarium on Cover Old Black and Volume 1 was based off of that one.
Gotcha.
In G major.
Mm-hmm.
He says,
G major. You said the key.
It's in E minor. So.
Tempo was 148 BPM, and I believe it was in G major.
Yeah. The Load Reload Bonanza with Paul Moak is going to be the best episode yet. I tried making a Best of Loads album. It was good fun, but on listening to it, having lived with the two albums for so many years, it just didn't sound right having songs run into each other that weren't in that order originally. Still very hard to narrow down 14 tracks. Good luck with that. Cheers, Tim.
We still need to do our follow-up Unload episode in which we sequence our Unload record.
Right.
So we'll do that. By the way, our Soundgarden night was a big success.
Yeah, it was awesome. We did Bird in My Hand. It's me and Clint, Paul Moog, our friend Aaron Tosti, and Tom Yankton on vocals, which a lot of you who saw it on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and stuff, everyone was like, oh my God, this... You guys had the same reaction we did when he started singing, because we never met him until we walked on stage.
We were like, so there were like 72 musicians played that night, by the
way.
Yeah,
it was a bunch.
It was a whole night of 90s covers, and at the end of that night, an Alice in Chains tribute band did a set of Alice songs, which I thought was awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
So what would happen is the green room was just full of people. It was like a scene from like the hotel scene from Almost Famous. You know,
yeah, totally.
Like, there's like Dylan in here and Led Zeppelin in here. But what was happening is we were kind of getting together we didn't rehearse.
Yeah.
Everyone just sort of learned the song on their own time and showed up to play it. But we were looking for our singer guy so we could at least meet him.
Yeah.
We didn't even know what he looked like. And literally right before we're supposed to walk on stage, the guy that was curating the whole thing, who was the drummer, I think, for the Alice band.
Him and his brother, yeah.
He's like, yeah, he's out in the crowd somewhere. I was like, would you mind grabbing him so we can talk to him? He's like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I can find him. So we literally introduced ourselves to him on stage about 10 seconds before we started the song.
It's the video that I uploaded everywhere. There's footage of us walking on stage shaking hands. I cut it out
until
the song starts. But yeah, I saw a clip of him singing another song with that cover band in the past, and I was like, wow, he can sing really high. So I was pretty sure he was going to hit this stuff. But the second he hit the first line of the song, I remember thinking like, oh shit, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I thought it was a highlight of the night.
I thought
although
so too.
A lot of the performances are really good. But
yeah.
We've got it on YouTube. It's on your YouTube channel, but we put it on all our socials if you guys want to find that. And him and I got hooked up after that, and we're going to be writing together.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because he's a country artist.
Yeah, he is.
All right, thanks for the email, Tim. Jason Berkowitz, which, by the way, did we finish Tim's email? Did we address everything?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Jason Berkowitz writes, hey, Clint and Ethan, please continue to keep the show going. Love everything Metallica, and as nearly all my friends bailed on them in the Black Album era. I've got no one to talk to share my love of the band with, so keep it up. I've been pulling double duty lately with both Hardwired and S&M, getting the symphony feel back in prep for the second incantation. I think he means incarnation. An incantation is like a spell.
Incantation.
I know other bands have since done the orchestra thing, but back when S&M originally came out, Metallica was the only band with balls big enough to go that route. So excited to see what'll be on version 2. As far as Hardwired goes, I've loved this record since day one. To me, it has the classic Metallica feel to it. The Puppets or Justice vibe, just a great, great record. Steadily moved up into my top five. I don't think they've had an opening four songs as sonic as the opening of Hardwired Atlas, Now That We're Dead and Moth on any other record. Wow. Those four songs to me are fucking brutal, a killer onslaught. And if you listen to the record disc 2 first, you get Spit Out the Bone in those four tracks in a row. Like I said, absolute metal. I'm interested in your take on that. Thanks, guys, for doing what you do and allowing me to listen, if not talk about my favorite band. I have been since 1983. Keep it metal, boys.
I mean, God, I would go with the first five tracks. Throw Halo on Fire in there, too. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one of the people that thinks it should be whittled down, except for maybe Murder 1. Put Lords of Summer where Murder 1 is. But yeah, I mean, if you open with Spit, like a battery.
Right.
And then you've got Hardwired, Atlas, Now That We're Dead, Moth, Halo.
Yeah.
And then maybe throw Dream No More on there.
Mm-hmm.
And oh boy.
Oh boy.
But I love Here Comes Revenge and Am I Savage.
Yeah,
I like
for sure.
Confusion. I mean,
Am I Savage has kind of become more of a favorite of mine.
Yeah, well, there you go. Look at you. Still learning, still growing.
Still learning after almost 3 years of that record being out.
Thanks for the email, Jason.
Our last email is from Greg. He says, hi, guys. I wanted to become a patron of your show. You guys do a great job. Always interesting and funny, very enjoyable, especially when you talk about the best band ever, Metallica. I'm going to the Berlin show in July if you need someone for the Metal Tales. I'm the president of the Steel City Sanitarium, the Pittsburgh chapter. That's a cool name. They're known as Steel City, everybody. There you go. Berlin was my 62nd Metallica show. First show was Richfield, Ohio with Cliff.
Holy shit.
That's cool. It's been a pleasure, and I'm proud to have followed the band from the beginning. Keep up the great work. Wow, thanks, Greg. That must have been a cool thing to see back then, man.
And I think as of hearing this, the Berlin show has already happened. So
it has.
But I tell you what I would like to do, because for those of you who don't know, our Metal Tales series, when the Worldwide Tour ends sometime in 2037, we're going to open up the Metal Tales to past shows, and I would love to talk to Greg about the show with Cliff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Anyone who has seen shows with Cliff, I want to talk about
Greg,
that.
Yeah, Greg, mark yourself down for that one whenever that happens, because we would love to hear about that. Seeing them in a small town, probably assuming a smaller venue, and I don't know.
Yeah,
that would be great to hear.
If he, what does he say? Is this the last? The first show was in Richfield, Ohio. Oh, he doesn't say the year.
I mean, 86 or before.
Absolutely.
You know,
If it was 86, it was probably in an arena with Ozzy.
Yeah.
But if it was on Lightning or the Raven Kill 'Em All or One tour, it was definitely a small club.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. It's that easy, folks. MetalUpYourPodcastShow@gmail.com. We'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. We love hearing from our fans and the Metal Up Your Podcast family.
Yep.
And now we go on to talk about our top 10 riffs as we exit our beloved email corner.
Please me to
when
exit.
Our lives as hey, it's Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we hope you're enjoying the Metal Tales from the Road series. If you've been keeping up with us, then you already know that we've covered every stop on the 2018-2019 North American Arena Tour, and we look forward to catching up with all of our European friends later this year on the Stadium Tour overseas. And there's more! After the Stadium Tour, we are continuing the Metal Tales series for any Metallica show in the past. Maybe you saw one of the Orion Festivals. Maybe you were at the Channel in 1984 and Cliff Burton bought you a beer. Maybe you were at one of the 30th anniversary shows, or you just saw a regular-ass show in North Dakota somewhere. We want to hear from you. Since Ethan and I started Metal Up Your Podcast, we wanted to find a way for listeners to call in and share their stories. Well, this is it. To make yourself eligible for a future or past Metal Tales episode, please consider joining us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you not only get to come on the show as a guest, you also get both of our Cover Our World Blackened EPs, monthly giveaways like deluxe box sets, rare vinyl, posters, and other goodies. You get early access to our YouTube videos, and we also let you ask our guests like Ray Burton, Michael Wagner, Hailstorm, members of Slipknot, your very own questions. For what essentially amounts to 2 cups of coffee a month, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast continues to grow in quality and content. For any of you on the ride with us, we love you, we thank you, peace and adios. All right, now here's how this is going to happen. Like we've done other top 10 lists, is we're going to hear yours first, and we're going to go 10 to 1.
Okay.
And just to familiarize you all and contextualize you all with it, our friend Ethan, who is an editing genius, is going to be playing clips of these solos. So you can hear it and go like, hell yeah, that is badass. I totally see why that's his number 7.
Oh, I forgot about that riff.
I mentioned this in the last episode when we thought we were going to talk about this. The tension here is, are you tempted to pick what you think the best riff is, like, in a general sense,
mm-hmm.
or simply your favorite?
Right. Well, we mentioned before we went into Hetfield interview territory that, you know, Enter Sandman riff is probably the best Metallica riff.
It's like the most recognized, or like the Spider Puppets riff.
And both of those are songs that propelled them to another level, mm-hmm. especially Enter Sandman.
But that's not part of the criteria.
Right. That's like Enter Sandman is not one of my favorite riffs. I love it, but
I basically picked the 10 riffs that, like, when a guitar's in my hands, the riffs I end up playing without thinking about it.
I thought of the same thing.
These are the riffs that naturally pour out of me. They're the ones I gravitate towards, and they're the ones that when they come on in the car or in the studio, I turn it up.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's as simple as that.
Absolutely.
And we do want to hear what other people's favorite riffs are. I don't know if we're going to do a thing where we, like, read a bunch on the next episode. We might, though.
Yeah, we've done that in the past.
Yeah,
we'll
read some of them.
We'll see how we're feeling. We might be a little jet-lagged after vacation, so we'll see.
And I'll say this. You know what? Let's go ahead and say we're going to read a smattering of these, because I think it's interesting, and I think our listeners would like to hear what people say to that.
Yeah.
Here's my only admonition for you guys that are going to send this stuff, is just keep it short and sweet.
Yeah.
If you write like big, long descriptions of why you want this riff, it's going to be harder to read that email because we have to think about time and consider our audience. I do want to see what people put.
Right. I mean, I didn't write down any descriptions.
We're hosting the show, we're going to be talking about this.
Yeah.
I also wrote down no descriptions, except for the times. Shall we jump in and get started? Is there anything else that needs to happen before we do this? Do you need to use the potty? Would you like a beer?
I think I'm good to go. I've used the potty when I was at home.
Would you like a prostate check?
I got I drank 7 beers before I got here.
Okay, good. And then drove here.
This is going to be fun.
We've had a few episodes where we sounded like that, I think.
Oh, slightly. Well, that was also back when we were knock out 2 episodes in a night, which seems insane now.
I've gotten a few emails over the last few months where it's like someone's like, hey, just discovered the show. I'm on episode 25. Listen, love it. Love the show. You guys chew on ice a lot. I'm like, dude, it's been 3 years.
And we don't have ice chewing. I can grab my coffee and chew on a piece of ice right now for old
time's
sake. Well,
just like whatever it is. Let me tell you guys, whoever's listening to this, episode 135, if we're 3 years from this episode and we got something wrong, or you don't like the fact that I have a lisp or whatever the problem is, do not write that email. For God's sakes.
It is kind of crazy. Like, because if you're new to the show, you can clearly see that there's a lot more ahead.
I know.
The podcast literally evolves.
Literally years.
Literally. I mean, we're only a couple months away from our 3-year anniversary.
Is that true? January?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of months?
I mean, it's mid-August right now.
September, October, November. 4 months.
4 months. It's a few.
Well, okay.
Okay.
Technically, that's true. I don't mind constructive feedback. It's nothing to do with that. It's
of course,
just that,
yeah.
What am I supposed to do? Get in a fucking time machine and go back to episode 25?
Go edit out ice crunching?
Anyway, so here we go. So I'm interested. So we're going to go 10 to 1. So 10 being obviously your least on the list. And
right.
Then we're going to hear the Big Daddy riff. I wonder how much overlap there will be.
We'll see. We're going to find out in about 2 seconds.
So here's how it's going to work. We're going to name the riff, and then you're going to hear a clip of it,
right.
And we're going to talk about it.
Yep.
So let's hear your number 10.
All right.
Number 10, favorite Metallica riff.
Number 10, the main riff to Wherever I May Roam.
Wow. Great choice. Didn't make my list.
Didn't make your list. Okay. I will say.
I'm shocked. That is a great riff.
I love that. And like you said, when you pick up a guitar, that's one that I play often.
Me too.
Especially when it gets to the bridge part. Exactly. One.
That was so ridiculous.
It was so awesome. You're welcome, everybody. One that I guess could be honorable mention that I almost got the number 10 slot was the Through the Never.
To me, it's my love for that song is well documented, so everyone knows I love Through the Never so much. However, that riff is a little too derivative of Puppets.
Correct. That's why it didn't make it.
The Through the Never riff that almost made my list was the...
Yep.
I love that double string.
There was a few on the Black Album when I was going through it that I was like, oh fuck, that's good. Like the one riff towards the end of Struggle Within, it sounds totally like it could be on Puppets. I love that one.
To me, Struggle always felt like it would have fit on Justice.
I agree. Yeah.
I always felt like you could switch out Harvester, mm-hmm, and Struggle Within. You could switch, right, the two records. Because Harvey, to me, is perfect for the Black Album. Harvester of Sorrow, to me,
did
sounds
you just
like
call it Harvey?
Well, that's what they call it.
I don't know if I've noticed that ever.
They, like on set lists and stuff, they call it Harvey.
I love
like
it.
Like they call the thing that should not be Thingy.
Thingy, yeah. Sandy.
Dude, what I'm trying to say is I'm so integrated into Metallica culture, especially with the boys themselves, that I've adopted their little nicknames for their songs.
Love it.
You know what they call Moth in the Flame?
Mothy.
Moth.
Moth.
You know what they call Spit Out the Bone?
Spit. Bone.
Isn't that cool?
Boner.
Isn't that a cool thing?
Yeah.
You know what they call Creeping Death?
Creth.
They call it Creep.
They call it Creep.
Yeah.
I knew that.
I'm telling you. I know a lot of those. I co-host a Metallica podcast.
I do know a lot of these. I did not know that about...
They call it Harvey.
Romy.
I think they just call that Rome.
Rome.
All right. Well, good choice. Number nine. Oh, in fact, I wanted to write these down. I wanted to keep a log.
A log?
So I could... It's log. It's big. It's heavy. It's wood. Remember that?
No.
It's log. It's better than bad. It's good.
What is that from?
Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, my God.
There was
God.
Like this fake commercial for... It was like trying to sell...
A logging company or something?
No, just selling log. But not like a log for your fire. Like a log is a toy.
Okay.
It's log, it's log, it's big, it's heavy, it's wood. It's log, remember. It's log, it's better than bad, it's good.
I don't remember this at all.
It rolls on stairs and over the chairs and over your neighbor's dog. It's great for a snack. It fits on your back. It's log, log, log. let's put that in for the good people.
Let's do that.
Hey, kid, you want a toy?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
How about a bike?
No.
A video game?
No!
Well, okay. You pick a toy.
I want... log! Boy, oh boy!
Yes, log. All kids love log.
What rolls past stairs, up under and pairs, rolls over your neighbor's dog. What's great for a snack, it fits on your back, it's log, log, log. It's log, log, it's big, it's heavy, it's wood. It's log, log, it's better than bad, it's good. Everyone wants a log, you're gonna love it long. Come on and get your log, everyone needs a log.
Log from Blammo.
Okay, so we got Rome at number 10.
Rome at number 10.
Great choice, by the way. You're off to a really good start, Ethan.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Feeling good about it. Number 9, The verse riff to End of the Line.
Need more and more tainted misery. Bleed, battle scars, chemical affinity. Rain, legacy, innocence corrode. Stain, right away, catatonic overload.
Very reminiscent of like Puppets era stuff.
Yeah. End of the Line has great riffs
in it. I've always liked, even the first time I listened to Death Magnetic, I remember really gravitating towards that riff and thinking like, wow, that's really cool. Hetfield's vocal sounds great over it.
Need more and more tainted misery.
So good.
Oh, it's great.
I love End of the Line.
I know. I love that. I love the whole record.
I do too.
Love it so much.
I just really love it.
It's just doggone it. People like it.
People who... And by the way, disclaimer, of course, people like what they like, and I don't give a shit, really.
Right.
But people who don't like Death Magnetic, I don't really understand it. I understand why people don't like Load and Reload. Hello, it's me, Tom Quay. I think Load and Reload are rubbish, and it's derivative in the songs of filler and long. I get it.
Get it, sure.
People who don't like Death Magnetic, though, I'm like, I don't get it.
If you're able to ignore production issues with Justice, or even Sane Anger, but not with Death Magnetic, because that was a big thing, obviously, was the production issues, the mixing and mastering issues.
I think there's also a psychological effect too, where if you hadn't have come, if they hadn't come out and like, yeah, we were participating in the loudness wars, we kind of fucked up and overmastered it and clipped it out.
Right.
I don't think people would. I think once they just sort of described that, people are like, oh, that's why I don't like it.
Right.
What if they had never said anything?
I don't know. I liked it from day one.
I didn't notice at the time.
What I noticed is that it was very dry. It was very like a Rick Rubin recording. He's known for that, you know, in the last 20 years, probably. Like, everything's really close in your face. There's not a lot of effects on things. That's the only thing I could have used on a little more reverb on stuff, on vocals and drums or something.
Dude, there are so many other good riffs in End of the Line, too.
Yep. It was a tough one to narrow down, but I came to the conclusion that was my favorite one.
All right, Ethan's number 9 is End of the Line, the bridge riff.
The verse riff.
Pardon me.
You are pardoned.
The verse riff. All right.
All right. You're going to love this one. Number 8, the main riff to King Nothing.
You can hear in the Load demos that's James who wrote that part.
Yeah.
However, how are we not going to think of old our boy Newstead?
I know.
It sounds great on the record. That slight chorusing effect, It's so heavy even though it's just bass information.
Yeah.
And it just sets James up that when he does come in with that super scooped mid,
yeah,
when he's doing the melody or the riff with him.
Yeah.
That is a great riff.
I love that riff. It's exciting. It's very it's kind of Black Album-ish, you know. It's like one of the heavier riffs in the Load Reload ethos.
It's heavy. It's definitely heavy, for sure.
That creepy little like bumblebee noise that's happening.
Yeah,
that
great. It's like a wah, like an oscillating wah delay thing that Kirk does.
Love it.
Good choice, my friend. So far,
Thank you.
No overlap.
Okay.
So this is interesting.
All right. I got a lot of main riffs on here because, I mean, even though there's some great riffs in between all this stuff, it's just stuff that really has impacted me over the years. And like you said, stuff that when I pick up a guitar, I want to play.
I have 5 bridge riffs and 5 main riffs.
Okay. I've got 4 non-main riffs.
Okay.
Okay. Just so we're clear.
Gotcha.
All right. The number 7, the main riff to Shortest Straw.
Kind of the chorus riff.
Yeah,
it's the riff they end up doing the chorus over.
Okay, yeah, so it could be the chorus riff as well. That's another one that I just love.
I never learned that one.
Really?
I don't know that one.
It's really easy.
I mean, I know how it goes, but I don't know how to play it.
Okay, Clint, it's E F E.
Welcome to the guitar lessons portion of Metal Up Your Podcast.
We're gonna do a rig rundown with Clint here in a second.
That'd be fun.
Would be fun. I mean, that's always been a top song for me on Justice, and that riff, especially when that kicks in, I'm like, oh, I love
this. Know what I would like to do as a bonus episode and also like take a video of it, as I would like for me and you to do rig rundowns in our various studios. We've been asked several
times.
That'd be
cool, yeah.
Just to go through all of our gear in HQ 1 and 2.
Like what we're using for recording to playing.
Yeah,
to
like
whatever.
Our guitars, our amps, our recording software.
That'd be a good idea. We should
do that.
Yeah.
We should really do that.
Like, we should totally do that.
All right. So your number 7 is the Shortest Straw. Main riff.
Shortest Straw, main riff.
Cool.
Or / chorus riff. Another main riff. Number 6, Moth in a Flame. Got some Hardwired creeping up in the midsection of this list.
Love it.
Yeah, that that's
so good.
I mean, that sounds like parts of Blackened
for
me. And
for any Lunar Satan fans out there, the main riff to Set the Witch on Fire Again is very much inspired by Moth.
Very cool. I can hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what's another great riff in that song? It's just the verse of where you're just pulling off an F.
Yeah, which
really is hard to play.
Yeah, and say not easy and sing it at the same time.
Also, the pre-chorus riff.
That one's great.
Damn.
There's some good shit.
And how about the kind of lightning inspired?
Yeah. Love it. I love it.
Moth in the Flame is just a masterpiece.
It's an instant classic.
Here we go.
All right. This might be a bit of a surprise because when you say the term riff, people think of like the heavier stuff, maybe the faster stuff. Not often in ballad territory, which I consider maybe the first half of this kind of ballad territory. The main riff to Orion. I play that all the time on guitar.
That's definitely a riff. I definitely have chordal riffs in my list.
Absolutely.
So I absolutely accept that.
Yeah. I mean, half of the King Nothing one is chords too. You know.
Yeah.
Orion just makes me feel so good, and it's like, you know, so much cliff on that song. There's, you know, a bass solo on the song. Of course, the bridge section. But yeah, that main riff just gets me so excited.
We are halfway through your list and we have no overlap.
This is good. We always good. Have some kind of overlap.
It's amazing how different. I mean, now that we get into the top 5,
there's got to be something.
All right, number 4.
Number 4 is the Kirk riff / bridge riff, or everyone calls it the Die riff to Creeping Death.
Classic. That's up there with Sandman.
Yeah,
also written by Kirk.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I had it as the Kirk riff or bridge riff. Yeah, that one, I mean, whether it's on record, whether it's on a CD, on my vinyl, on my copy on cassette, or at live at a show.
Or Laserdisc.
Or Laserdisc.
Or A-Track.
Or A-Track.
Or phonograph. Phonogram.
Or on an old school 78. That riff never gets old to me. Ever, ever, ever. It will always be something that I think is very special in the Metallica riff catalog.
Well, I absolutely agree, and that is definitely on my list.
So there's there's a partial overlap. It's not the same number, though, I'm assuming.
It's not.
Okay.
Number three.
Now, back to another main riff. I thought long and hard about this one because they play it every show.
Well, I certainly hope you did.
I did. I really did. And it's something that seems like, well, to me, it's close to choosing the Enter Sandman riff.
Okay.
Main riff to Sad But True.
Wow.
Super heavy, just so classic. And
was just always such a mystery for me to play because it's tuned differently.
It's tuned to D. It's in D, open D.
Open D, yeah.
Yeah. When I was growing up and learning that song, I would tune to drop D, and I was like, wow,
well, the whole guitar is down an entire step.
Right. That's why I couldn't figure it out when I was younger until I could afford, saved up my allowance money to buy the tab book.
I remember when I was at a point in my playing, which was obviously pretty early on, where I could not really hear, my ear wasn't developed, but I could read the tab mathematically. Like,
sure.
It's like doing a recipe. Like, I have no talent for, like, you know, you can look at a like, my wife does this. I don't know if Callie's like this, or maybe you're like this. My wife looks at a recipe, and it's like, okay, I'm going to follow these steps, these other steps, whatever it's telling me to do, I'm going to improvise. I'm going to put more or less of whatever it is. Or they want me to use turmeric, and I'm going to use something that's like turmeric but has a different thing.
Callie will do that usually on the second time around.
The first time you kind of get it down and then you just eat it and you know what you want to change.
Exactly.
My wife's the same way.
Yeah.
I have to fall. I have no talent, no culinary talent, and I don't have a great palate either. So for me, it's like, oh, it needs more salt. I'm like, I don't know. Put some hot sauce in it, whatever. Right. But she'll improvise and it'll be great.
Yeah.
I'll make it exactly the way the recipe says and it still won't be good.
Yeah.
It'll just be flat. And I used to be like that with tab. And I remember not understanding why I'm doing what the tablature says, but it doesn't sound right.
It's crazy sometimes when you would do that when you were younger.
Because I didn't read this fine print above the tablature that said open D tuning.
Yeah, exactly.
So
and there was an age where, as a guitar player, I didn't know what open D tuning was. I would say it was probably Rage Against the Machine when that first record came out that I finally was like, oh.
What song's in that tuning on that
drop
record?
Drop D, like most of them.
You're talking about just straight drop D, like Killing in the Name of.
Yeah, yeah, just drop D, not D standard.
I got into
Helmet, Helmet the band.
I got into drop D because of Soundgarden. It was Spoon Man.
Yeah, that's a drop D tune.
That I was finally like, oh, you detune this string and then you have this big open bar chord.
And it's so awesome.
And you can just bar it and move it anywhere.
Yeah.
That was a pretty big moment for me.
Very exciting. Very exciting.
all right, well, number three, Sad But True. Hard to argue with that.
Yeah, okay.
Now we're crunch time.
Crunch time. Last two, you may not be surprised by them, or maybe you will, I don't know.
Okay.
The chorus riff at number two. Now, this is kind of debatable because there's kind of two choruses. What I'm considering chorus A.
Puppets.
Yeah, Master Puppets.
Is that the riff you're talking about?
Yeah, on Crawling Faster.
Awesome.
Because then it goes into the Master of Puppets and Pulling Strings. That's kind of a chorus as well.
That's his Big Diamonds, though.
Yeah. But yeah, that riff has always gotten me so stoked.
We still have no overlap, but only one overlap so far.
One overlap. This is crazy. Okay. Okay.
And your number one favorite Metallica riff, as of now, this might be different in a year.
Listen, this may not come to surprise to most of you, but thanks to old New Steady. Or as I call him, Steady.
Oh boy, we might have the same one.
The main riff to Blackened.
Yeah. We share the same number one.
Well, you just gave up your number one.
Well,
the element of surprise is gone.
Shit. Okay. Well, I mean, hats off to Jason. Of course, that being his first real creative contribution to the band, the kickoff song to their most intricate, crazy record.
Right.
And just easily one of their best songs and best riffs.
Hands down. I mean, it not only is it a great riff, it's fun to play. It's hard to play, especially if you're trying to do it with all downstrokes like the guys do.
It's easily one of the hardest songs to play.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it is just going from that that note right there. Yeah, then it flips in the bridge. But even
it flips in the intro too. It flips on the intro and in the after the solo.
It is on the intro?
Oh yeah.
Well,
it goes from goo ga 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 to da 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 da. Once the drums come in, it switches.
I'm gonna challenge you on this only because this is one of those songs that because of the way Lars plays, I always thought the intro was da 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 da, not do da 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 da.
It starts that way when there's no drums.
I know exactly what you're saying, and I think that's how you're hearing it.
You're saying after the solo, actually does that.
So basically,
about to get to the fucking bottom.
Here's what I'm saying: the downbeat when the drums come in for that riff, oftentimes seems like it's the snare drum, ga-ga-ga-da-da-ga-ga-da-da, right? He's actually doing the downbeat is the kick drum.
So what?
Then when the drums come in, it sounds like they come in on the one like.
Yes, I'm saying that happens in the intro and at the point you're talking about, but you're saying changes.
I'm just talking about the intro. I'm saying it doesn't change. It's the normal riff we know. It's not flipped on the intro. It sounds like it is because of where Lars is coming.
Okay, we're saying the exact same thing.
I don't think we are.
Well, it's semantics. When the drums come in and change the perceived downbeat, you have to change the way you're playing it. You have to change the way you accent it.
Here's where I'm getting at. For years and years and years, I was listening to it like that, where I'm feeling like I'm changing the flipping of the riff.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point, it made sense to me where I heard it, and I was like, wait, it's actually not on the downbeat there. It's on the upbeat. It's something flipped in my brain where I heard it differently, and I'm like, oh, now that makes sense
We've talked about it too much. We got to listen now. All right, we're about to play this song, and we'll once and for all figure this out. Black and Pearl Jam's Black, is that what we're looking for?
Yep, Pearl Jam Black. Okay. I'm gonna tap it out.
Let's listen first.
Okay.
So we'll know what we're talking about. Ba da da ba ba da da. Da 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 da.
So that.
And then we're
okay,
fine.
So what I'm saying is, so you're saying when the snare comes in, it's flipped. And what I'm trying to explain is, that's what it sounds like. It's almost like this extra little measure in there, where it sounds like da 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 da.
I'm not saying that the main riff changes. If the drums never come in, it's the same riff.
Right.
But you're saying the way I'm hearing it means that's the same thing. It flips. Whether it's another instrument that's accenting something that makes it flip, it's flipped. The downbeat's flipped.
I don't hear it that way. When the snare comes in, that's where it sounds like it flips. And that's what I thought for years. He's basically playing the fast beat without the kick drum. So it sounds like play it again and I'm going to clap along.
What's that going to prove? The tempo doesn't change?
No, it's not the tempo. I'm going to show you because like...
Here we go.
Watch, it'll sound like the snares on the upbeat. See what I'm saying?
Does that mean what you just did means nothing to me. I just heard you clapping to the song.
Well, I'm saying like, I'm clapping because right when the snare drum comes in, that's where it sounds like the snare drum is on the downbeat, but it's actually on the upbeat. That's what confused me for so many years.
I feel like we're just saying the same thing, just calling it different things.
Maybe we are, but I'm having an absolute blast talking about this.
That's the reason it is so confusing. The riff doesn't change, but the way that you have to play it with the band gets upside down. If you're playing that with a band, you're responding to how it's moving with the drums.
The riff doesn't change.
I'm not saying the riff changes. The accent changes because of the drums.
Okay, maybe we are talking about the same thing.
We are.
I heard it one way for so many years, and then it made sense to me after a while. I'm like, oh, it doesn't flip until the bridge, but
In the way before the drums come in, when it goes goo ga ga goo ga ga, you're basically ignoring the goo ga. You're the goo of the goo ga. You're just hearing it go ga 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 ga. That's how you hear it from the beginning, right? That's what you're saying. So when the drums come in,
I hear the goo ga. I hear that as the one. Goo ga 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 ga. Goo ga 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 ga.
Right. You're ignoring the goo.
No, that's the one to me.
Goo ga.
One, oh, two, boy. Three, four. Go,
ga, we ga, have to quit ga, talking ga, about ga. This. This is just gonna. This is gonna be so fucking boring for our listeners.
People are probably laughing because we're getting into a friendly debate on this. That's okay.
I hope they're laughing.
It's okay. But
all right. Well, let's move on to my list, and then when we get to my number one, let's not revisit that. you'll have to just listen to that too and see if that needs to be taken out.
I stand by it. I had a good time discussing that.
Okay, good. Well, hopefully they did too. All right, my number 10. So we only have two overlaps. You know about the placement of the first one, but you don't know where my creep one is. So
true.
Hopefully that we maintain a level of suspense.
Yeah.
For everyone at home. Okay, here we go. Number 10, the bridge to My Apocalypse.
Ooh.
It starts with Kirk doing it with kind of like a filtered wah. But what's really impressive is after the solo, James adds like a bunch of cool, like really odd triplet chugga chuggas, mm-hmm. and then it ends with that tail.
Yeah.
And then he sings over it.
Yeah. That's a great riff. That one's so thrashy and weird and could have been on Kill 'Em All or something.
Dude,
like,
My Apocalypse is, it went from like a fairly obscure song for me when we first started the podcast to a go-to.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows, favorites and shit change, but it's a go-to right now.
Yep.
Number 9, the Guitarmony bridge of Harvester of Sorrow. And then the way that they do the down to down to down, you think it's over, then they throw a last one in there,
yeah.
before the show things have
yep. That's a great one.
Love it.
I love more than I think most of the records. I think the guitar harmonies are some of their best on Justice.
Yeah,
this part the bridge and Black End. There's all sorts of good stuff.
Yep, I agree. Where are some other big guitar harmonies? Fight Fire.
Yeah, Fight Fire with Fire.
We're going
to
space on that.
The whole outro to Fade to Black, those two, one goes, that one's great.
There's a great guitar mini solo in one.
Yep.
Okay, so that's my number 9. Number 8, this is a curveball.
Okay.
And this isn't an endorsement of the song necessarily. This is just a badass riff, and that's Ronnie.
Interesting. That's so crazy. That's one of my least favorite songs.
But the riff, though.
The riff is cool.
That spanky, telly sound.
It's very country.
Yeah.
You know.
And I love when it goes to this kind of B part of that.
It's kind of it's the chorus riff.
It's very like ZZ Top.
Yes.
It is the chorus riff. Yep. So that's my number 8. That'll probably get a rise out of Tom Cui. Number 7 is Master of Puppets, but it's the... It's a really weird riff towards the end of the song.
The David Bowie part.
It's the David Bowie part that they, yeah. I guess that would have come from Cliff.
Probably.
I bet it was Cliff listening to Bowie. If you guys haven't heard that, maybe we could put that in, the comparison
yeah.
of those two riffs with the Bowie thing. I think you can find it on YouTube.
Yeah, you can.
For people who've seen a lot of shows or watch a lot of YouTube videos, that's the moment where, and they've been doing this for a long time, where during that moment, all the boys go to where Lars is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they all kind of get in a circle during that.
And they reconvene by Lars to talk about how great Dave Bowie is.
Remember when we ripped off Dave Bowie in 1986
yeah,
for this
part?
That's
pretty awesome.
What's crazy about it is it's all downstrokes except for the
yeah.
If you try playing that in time, because you're obviously going up and down the top three strings of the guitar,
right, yeah.
It's like very chunky. You have to be palm muting. It's got to be very clean.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fucking
awesome
riff.
That's a no-joke riff, man. That's a good one. I'm glad you put that on the list.
And that might be why Cliff got a co-write on that tune. You know, that might be his contribution.
Yeah, maybe so.
Number six, another bridge riff. The bridge riff to Damage Incorporated. Yeah, the triplet notes are just unusual, and that I believe yeah. that's a Kirk Hammett riff.
Oh, that one is? Okay. Yeah. I love that one.
We chew and spit you out.
Again,
it's over that.
Another tough one to play, too.
Super tough to play. It's once you kind of get the muscle memory, it's a little easier. It's just knowing where the notes to hit on those triplets, because mm-hmm. for me, it's a little counterintuitive.
Right.
That's number six. Number five, like you, I had to give some Hardwired love,
okay.
but I went with the intro to Spit Out the Bone. Getting all those right hand open notes mm-hmm. is so hard.
That is a fun song to play along to. I figured it out one day, and it was a really good time.
Super fun.
Yeah.
Okay, moving into my top five. Number four, probably, it's not the simplest because of how fast and how hard it is to play, but
okay.
it's just one open string. Do you know what I'm going to say?
I'm going to say Disposable Heroes.
Disposable Heroes. Before every show, when we're standing by the side of the stage holding our guitar for our first song, waiting for the intro music, that's my right hand.
Your warm up.
And I don't know if you can include them together, but when it goes to that C sharp, I love that too. But just that open.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest ones. And I think that's a very good thing to point about Metallica and especially Hetfield's riff writing capabilities. The fact that he can write something that's just one note, it's just the rhythm of his right hand, and it makes it such a rad riff is the power of his writing skills, man.
Yeah, well, that C-sharp riff is Kirk.
Yeah.
So but the open one is James, and yeah, I mean that's like the main riff he sings over. He goes to like a G and then an F sharp, mm-hmm. but that is a really impressive song. Another sort of deeper cut, because I'm not really a big, I mean I'm not a big Puppets guy, but Puppets was always more elusive to me than Lightning or Justice or Black Album or Bob Rock era stuff.
Sure.
But that's one that after doing the podcast and really getting into it just popped out to me like, holy shit, why was I not blasting this song when I was 13?
Yeah. Well, guess what? You can blast it in your 30s now.
I'm having a really good time at 35 blasting Disposable Heroes,
right.
Driving down East Nashville, Gallatin Road.
Totally.
All the hipsters in their Florentine mustaches and ironic suspenders are like, what's that?
Berets.
If they're not all playing a floor tom, I'm not interested.
Downstage percussion.
I started a new Twitter segment called Hard Pass.
I've been reading along. It's pretty good.
Pretty funny.
I like the one about going to Burning Man. That was a good one.
Yeah. What was it? Burning Man?
It was like, hey, want to do 100 milligrams of edibles and go watch something at Burning Man for 6 hours.
There was a guy on our bus the other night that like after a night of drinking, it was like bedtime.
Yeah.
We're all going to go to bed. It was like 2 a.m. And he was like, hey, I've got these 50 milligram gummies.
Goo.
He was like, who wants one for bed? I was like,
50.
50? That's not a bedtime. That's not bedtime. That's like psychedelic time.
That's definitely... Yeah, or just you're just hiding in your bunk. That's paranoia.
Yeah,
like, not to everybody.
That's like panic attack.
You're
in
like
the
a
bunk.
Hardcore, you know, THC guy or gal, edibles, smoking it, whatever. And 50 milligrams isn't that big a deal to you? Then you do a lot of it. But
here it is. Want to split this 100 milligram weed gummy and hit the silent disco at Burning Man for 6 days straight?
Hard pass.
Gonna catch the Brothers during the afternoon slot on the side stage at the spinoff festival, Bonadude. If you win at the ironic game of horseshoes, you can exchange your tickets for a PBR and a trucker hat that says Hemp Life. Hard pass.
I love that you're doing a hard pass segment because there's this show that I love right now called Letterkenny. It's a Canadian comedy. It's real ridiculous. It's very, very Christopher Guest-ish,
mm-hmm.
But they say hard pass a lot.
Goat yoga and then post-irony bowling at Pinewood Social while wearing sunglasses indoors all night?
Hard pass.
So one of these I wrote, my wife was like, that actually sounds good. Dashboard Confessional reunite and play all their hits, an EP, for women in their mid-30s who used to fall asleep crying to screaming infidelities. A Jimmy Eat World tribute band opens. The only light in the venue is candles. Hard pass.
And that's when she said that sounds kind of nice.
My wife was like, that sounds fun.
I wouldn't mind going to see that.
Dawes cover band playing at the Crying Wolf in East Nashville this Friday. Lead singer has a Florentine mustache. Drummer wears a monocle.
A monocle. You should have added they all play floor toms.
God damn, the floor tom thing. All right, so that was my number four, which that was where you had Creep, by the way.
Yep.
Number three, another shocker. Or not a shocker, but another counterintuitive choice.
Okay.
I went with the main riff of Bleeding Me. Super creepy, chorusy, but then at the end of the song, he plays that riff full gain.
Yeah, no.
Like the drums come out and it just goes to this hat thing, and it's a heavy riff.
It is a heavy riff.
It's like very Sabbath.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I agree with that. Yeah, Sabbath is a good comparison.
Number two, where you went with the chorus of Puppets, I went with the Die Bridge to Creep.
Okay, so there it is.
Can't leave that off the table.
You can't leave that off the table. I mean, and that's, you know, it's a, and if you're making a list at home, it's a really tough thing because, I mean, the main riff of, you know, that's great.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah, it is great.
You know, like, do I like that more than the Rome riff? Like, maybe, but at the moment, I was like, I want to do this. But
see, I would put either that intro or like the spider riff of Puppets.
Right.
I'd put that in like a top 10 of like most badass, well-known Metallica riffs.
Right, yeah. Top 10 thrashiest riffs or whatever.
And like put battery in there.
Yeah.
you know.
How did Battery not make our list?
I don't really respond to Battery the way a lot of people do. I think Battery's awesome. It's cool, but I don't really go for it. I mean, here are some that we left off the table. And then, of course, my number one that we already heard is Blackened. So there's no argument there.
So the riff in Blackened.
Hold on. Let's listen to it. Here's some stuff off the table. The bridge to Blackened. So that's off the table. The spider riff to Puppets.
Yeah. From Dire's Eve.
No Dire's Eve. And I thought, you know, maybe that picking part of Harvester.
Right.
The main riff of Creeping Death.
Yep, that one's out of there.
The machine gun part to One.
Right, that's a riff.
The
nothing else really.
The bridge to Light to Fade to Black.
That's not on there. There's, I mean,
so I didn't have
Fight Fire with Fire.
I didn't have anything off Black Album.
Oh, nothing.
So okay. I had one off Lightning, three off Puppets, two off Justice, two off Load, one off Death Magnetic, one off Hardwired. If we had to pick one from Reload, what would it be?
I mean, it's simple, but I've always loved that.
Fuel. You know what I like in Fuel?
Yeah, that's good.
A great riff off Hardwired that's also in Spit of the Bone is that...
Yep, that one's great.
That'd be one.
Starts with a bass on that one too. I love that. Love that.
Loves it.
I mean, the Black Album to me is still chock full of so many good riffs. I mean, obviously we talked about like Struggle Within.
Mm-hmm.
But even like, it's very slow, but even on My Friend of Misery,
yep,
that kind of stuff in there. A Wolf and Man's a great one. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, neither of us had anything off Kill 'Em All. No Four Horsemen.
Correct. Yeah.
No Whiplash.
You know what I almost had in there? I had it at number 10 originally. I had Jump in the Fire, the main riff. The Mustaine riff.
Yeah, Mustaine. Oh.
Sorry.
David. Are any of these Mustaine riffs, I wonder? I don't think any of mine are. You know what? Maybe Ronnie.
Probably Ronnie.
Metallica stole that from the Risk album.
Yeah, no. The only thing I had off of Lightning was Creeping Death. So,
well, there you have it, folks. Our top 10 riffs list. I'm sure that some of you out there disagree or have your own takes on that or why some should have made it and some shouldn't have. We'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
MetalUpYourPodcastShow@gmail.com.
And remember, short descriptions.
Just keep it short and tight so we can get through a lot of them. And, you know, I know that you want us to read your essay on the merits of Hit the Lights riff or whatever. Yeah. And I'd like to read it, honestly. Mm-hmm. We just can't read that, take time on the show to read all those.
You know another one that's surprising that wasn't on our list? Mm. The main riff to Seek and Destroy.
Oh, my God. Another big one is... Big Cliff part.
Yeah. Great.
Crap.
Let's delete this.
I can't believe you just said the phrase delete that without...
I said delete this.
Oh, okay, so that it didn't conjure Torben on the carpet.
Right, yeah. No, yeah. We don't want to conjure Torben so swiftly here.
Well, here's the deal. We're glad we were able to get this episode in. I had a write that canceled today. You had some free time before you have up some obligations this afternoon. And
you leave tomorrow, man.
I leave tomorrow early in the morning. Check this out. Flying to Detroit early in the morning, 12-hour layover in Detroit.
Goo.
Yeah.
You're going to get out of the airport, I assume, right?
We're going to go, but, you know, I'm not going to get in line with the many people who shit on Detroit. It's a beautiful place.
Dude, Detroit's awesome.
But it's not my ideal place to spend 12 hours.
You have time to see a Tigers game and grab lunch and dinner.
We're going to go find some dope food. And
there's some great places in Detroit. That city is really, really... been coming up a lot more in the last few years, man. Every time I've been there, it gets better and better.
I hope so.
I love it.
But, you know, if you had a top 10 list of cities to camp out with for 12 hours, I'd be shocked if Detroit made it into the top 10.
Probably not.
How about San Francisco, LA, yeah. Salt Lake City, Chicago,
City, Denver,
Denver, Manhattan,
Columbus, one of my favorite cities.
Columbus, Ohio?
Yeah, I love Columbus.
I mean, I like Columbus, but that's not making
there's just a lot of...
I put Cincinnati over Columbus.
Really? I've got some friends there, and I've gotten to just, you know... When you're in a city, when you know someone that lives there, you get to see the coolest parts of it.
Yeah, for real.
So
that's
kind of what the charm was being shown around by somebody else.
I put
there.
Baltimore over Detroit.
Really? Okay.
I put D.C. over Detroit.
Well, weed is legal in D.C.
You know where I'd rather go, rather not go, than I'd rather go to Detroit than Atlanta?
Yeah.
I have never cared about
it. I'm going to Atlanta on Sunday night.
For a gig?
Yeah. Gig on Monday.
I don't know. I don't want to just rip on cities, but I'd rather go to Charlotte than Detroit.
I'd rather go to Detroit than Jackson, Mississippi.
I'd rather go to Boise than Detroit.
I've had a good time in Boise.
I'd rather go to Eugene, Oregon than Detroit.
I mean, most of Oregon's all beautiful.
It's super beautiful.
So beautiful.
It's like the most beautiful.
I get to do 3 nights in Portland next week.
Yeah, that's
next weekend.
Fun.
That's going to be fun.
I've actually had kind of a rough go the last few times I've been to Portland.
Yeah?
Yeah, kind of had a rough time there.
A little too Portlandia for you, or?
No, it wasn't the crunchy stuff. I had some, maybe the last 3 times I've been there, kind of had some brushes with danger.
Oh, okay.
With some like seedy shit.
Okay.
That's kind of turned me off a little bit. Okay, Portland. Fair enough. In fact, my friend Bob Schneider, I wasn't there for this, but he was just there playing the Doug Fur in Portland. You ever played that club?
No, I never played it. It's usually the Roseland or...
Roseland Ballroom.
What's the one with the bouncy floor upstairs? You know what I'm talking about?
Not the Crescent Ballroom.
Maybe it is the Crescent Ballroom. It's something, another ballroom.
Yeah.
Let's just call it the Crescent Ballroom.
Well, they're playing the Doug Fur, which is this really cool club, and it's not even in a bad part of town, but it's got a really bitchin' hotel connected to it called the Jupiter, and we always stay there when we play the Doug Fur. Their Sprinter got robbed.
Oh, dang. Like, what, during the show or
during
sleeping?
During the show.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bummer, man. There's a lot of cities where that's on the rise. Like, St. Louis, it happens a ton.
St. Louis is rough.
The thing is, I've always had a great time in St. Louis, but there's some rough-ass areas in St. Louis.
I remember
there's
a club there called Off-Broadway.
I played there, yeah.
And I remember, this has happened to me a few times. It also happened to me in Hartford, Connecticut, which is another
Hartford
really rough place.
It is, yeah.
So this happened to me in Hartford, and this happened to me in St. Louis, because Off-Broadway is in East St. Louis, which is super rough.
Yeah.
Is we were asking the promoter, like, hey, where can we go get some food, like, in between soundcheck and the gig, like, just wanting to get some Thai food or whatever. He's like, oh, man, there's stuff around here. He's like, do not go to the left.
Yeah.
He was like, do not walk any blocks further.
Yeah.
Left when you walk out of the club. He's like, if you go right, there's a Thai place or whatever. There's a barbecue spot.
I ate there.
And we're like, wow. I mean, it just didn't feel, 2 blocks right and 2 blocks left don't feel that different to me in terms of the danger of a neighborhood.
It's crazy like that in some cities, especially in other countries too. I mean, first time I went to Mexico City, talked to the person at the hotel. I'm like, hey, looking for some good food. Where should I go? Like, I'll go down the street. There's a bunch of great stuff. Just don't go that way.
Right.
I'm like, okay, I won't go that way.
We've been talking about going to Japan. My wife's like, hey, we want to go visit these temples, but there's a law there that you can't go into the temples if you have tattoos. You have to just cover your tattoos up because that's the only way they can keep the Yakuza out of the temples.
Oh, crazy.
So they can't like ban Yakuza. It's an underground gangster army.
Right. Yeah.
But they can make tattoos outlawed, and the Yakuza is famously covered in tattoos.
I got a lot of stares when I was there with how many tattoos I have.
Well, I'm like, Jesus, are we going to brush up against the fucking Yakuza over there? I'm not trying to be in a cursed
Japan. I never felt unsafe in Japan. It was such a great time. People were cool. Food is amazing everywhere you go. I mean, it's just a wonderful place. It's like nowhere else I've ever been.
I'll tell you what, and we'll end with this.
Okay.
And by the way, I'm sure all these cities have beautiful people and wonderful people.
We're not
like, you know, making huge judgment calls, but these are just my experiences. We played The Saint in New Jersey. You ever played The Saint?
I have not.
It's like a really small little club on the corner of the street. It's like 2 blocks away from the Stone Pony.
Okay, I played Stone Pony.
Where Bruce Springsteen famously, Bon Jovi, kept those clubs alive.
Yeah.
And it's the only time that like I woke up, you know, the crew's loading in our stuff, and I was just going to roam out of the bus. I think I had to do laundry. So I had my suitcase with me. It's like I looked up a laundromat on my phone. It's the only time I've ever gotten off the bus, walked to the corner, and was like, I'm getting back on the bus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it was sketch city.
Stockton, California is like that.
Stockton?
You ever played Stockton?
I don't think so.
It's gotten a little bit better, but it's a fairly rough area. And there's this venue that I play with Need to Breathe, this theater, and it's right next to it's not a jail, but it's like where dudes go meet their probation officer and all this stuff, and like a lot of sketchy dudes coming out of there. And it's another one of those cities where like, don't go that way, go this way.
Yeah.
You know?
Stockton. What part of California is it in?
It's up near the Bay Area.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, but 40 minutes east maybe.
Yeah.
It's not great, but good show.
Well, I'm glad you didn't die when you played Stockton.
And we hope you all enjoyed our geography lesson there, everybody.
Here's the deal. So we're going to be, the next several episodes are going to be bonus radio episodes while we're on our respective vacations. Look for look on the socials for our invite to Ethan's London meetup, whenever that'll be. Of course, he would love to see you all and talk about the show and all that stuff. Although I know that we have listeners in Japan, because we can see, we have like thousands of listeners in Japan.
Yeah.
No one from Japan has ever written in. So... Yeah.
They're so polite over there. They don't even want to email us.
I mean, I don't know. But so I'm not anticipating talking to anybody about Metal Up Your Podcast over there.
Hey, you know, maybe in Japan you'll find the long-lost Samim.
Well, Samim's in Turkey.
Well, maybe, but I'm saying maybe he lives in Japan now.
Oh, well, that would be incredible.
Awesome. Can you imagine going to a temple and you're like, God, that's Samim. Even though we know what he looks like.
And then he tells on me for having a tattoo, and then the Yakuza kidnap me and hold me for ransom.
Right, and then I got to find a new co-host. And
cut my penis off.
Bummer.
All right, so we'll
see. Good noodles.
We'll see you in a few weeks. And I really am. I know we've talked about it last few episodes. I really am excited about giving away a lot of the shit in my garage.
Yeah, we'll
do
it this fall for sure.
So listen, if you're able to, it's basically $5 a month, and it goes a long way into supporting the work we do over here. It's very time consuming. Our lives are insane, and we really carve out a lot of our free time to do the show because we love doing it. We love Metallica. And we love the Metal Up Your Podcast family. So check that out. Metal Up Your Podcast Show at gmail.com. MetalUpYourPodcast.com. Anything else?
Konnichiwa and have fun in Japan, dude. I'm so happy for you guys.
And with that, we'll just say peace.
Adios.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.